Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Really, I think when COVID hit and the world turned upside down, we just kind of went, hey, you know what? Let's just give it a go. Honestly, I kind of thought we would see business really go downhill once COVID hit, when people, you know, were kind of wrestling with jobs and employment stuff and all that. And I think really, it's, you know, with a combination of like the industry growing like it is just in general. And then I think like with COVID happening, the byproduct of that was it forced a lot of people outside also. And then, you know, with the government handing out stimmy checks like crazy, people had money burning holes in their pockets.
That was Chris Freeman sharing his story of the COVID boost. What do wax cotton canvas fishing bags, Brad Pitt, and Eddie Bauer have in common? Listen in, and Chris brings it all together today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how you doing today? Thank you for stopping by the show. Click that subscribe button or that follow button, and you'll get updated when the next big episode goes live on this podcast. Today's episode is presented by Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior products at an affordable price. Tons of resources, tying materials, tools, accessories, everything you need to get started, to up your game, to dig into your tying game with Togan's. They've been over delivering since 2005, so it's time to check it out right now. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Togan's and start your journey right now. You support this podcast by clicking over through Togan's online. T-O-G-E-N-S. Togan's. Angler's Coffee Roast, a full range of coffees with one goal in mind. You know they're delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. That's our goal. Our goal here is if you drink coffee, I want you to be drinking Angler's. Everybody who listens, this is our goal for Joe this year. They've got it all going. You've heard it all before. Joe's got an awesome ship, awesome coffee. He's got a good ship going there. So head over to wetflyswing.com/anglers to support a sustainable company with unsurpassed taste. Chris Freeman, musician, old school gear nerd, and full-time fly fishing product head man, shares his River Runs Through It story today. We find out about the benefits of this wax cotton bag above the classic lines and who originally connected us through this podcast. Shout out to Tyler for all the Tylers in the house. All the Tylers in this right now. All the Tylers, raise the roof. Come on, raise the roof. Tyler, I know you're out there. You're hearing me. This is all you. Let's do it. Raise that. So without further ado, here is Chris Freeman from EmergerFlyFishing.com. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Dave. How's it going, dude?
Good. Good to have you on the show here, man. We're gonna jump into some what kind of looks like some old school fishing gear, which is pretty cool. So we actually had a recent episode, which was like a classic gear episode we did, and it was,
yeah,
you know, we're talking about like vintage and classic and all this stuff. But your stuff kind of reminds me of that a little bit, which is pretty cool. But you know, you're at Emerger Fly Fishing, and we're gonna jump into that. But before we do, take us back to the fly fishing, the beginning of how you got into fly fishing.
Yeah. So I don't have some sort of like cool story about, you know, deep fly fishing lineage, you know, my grandfather taking me out when I was little to the family pond and getting to cast his bamboo rod and all that. And, you know, I'm pretty jealous of, you know, some guys that have cool stories like that. I didn't come to fly fishing probably till much later in life. I've been fishing for probably 13 or 14 years now. And I think for me, honestly, fly fishing is probably one of those things that's kind of been pursuing me my whole life. And we've just been kind of missing each other, I think.
Yeah.
I was born down outside of Houston, Texas, and grew up there pretty early. And then when I was about probably 8 years old. I think this was the summer before my third grade year. My parents kind of came to my brother and I and announced that we were moving to Alaska.
Hmm.
And that had to do with my dad's job. He worked for an oil company at the time and had put in for a transfer. And I think my parents kind of just wanted to give my brother and I the experience of, you know, kind of growing up somewhere else and have, you know, just seeing someplace different than where we were born at. And my parents, I think, kind of just wanted to be somewhere different also. And so when I was right before my third grade year, my parents kind of up and moved us to Alaska. And so we ended up living in Palmer, which is right outside of Anchorage in the Mat-Su Valley. We lived there for about 6.5 years and then came back to Texas, I guess, probably around the time I was 15. So it was like halfway through my freshman year. And the irony of all that is that I lived in a place that's like this epic fly fishing destination for salmon fishery and, you know, these great northern, you know, cold water species and all that. And fly fishing was not on my radar in any way. And it's just this, it's one of those things I look back now and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like I live in this, you know, amazing place and it just wasn't a thing, you know, and like our family wasn't really big, you know, fishermen or hunters or anything like that at the time. We went fishing 3 or 4 times when we were there, but it was just conventional fishing for salmon or halibut. You know, my dad would hire a guide and all that stuff. But, you know, we ended up back in Texas, not in Houston, but in Tyler, which is kind of between Dallas and Shreveport. And I finished out high school there and ended up becoming a musician.
Hmm.
And so did college there for a couple of years and moved to Nashville and did music there, both for school and just kind of playing around with some stuff. And again, like the irony is like I'm living, you know, not that far from some other really great fly fishing areas in Eastern Tennessee and Western North Carolina. And probably knew guys that even fly fished at the time. And it just wasn't even on my radar at all, you know? And then I ended up going back to Texas again and ended up kind of touring and playing in a bunch of bands as a singer-songwriter and just playing different instruments and stuff like that. And at some point kind of ended up working at a church of all things and working with doing both music stuff and then kind of working with college students also. And one of the things with working with college students was that I spent a lot of time with college students just coming and sitting in my office and just kind of spilling, you know, whatever's going on in their life to me and all that and kind of doing some counseling and stuff, and which I love doing, but it turns out that most of that can be pretty heavy. And so I kind of was finding that I needed ways to just kind of unwind and decompress and all that. And a buddy of mine, Matt, started taking me out bass fishing just with conventional tackle and all that. And I just really fell in love with fishing and spent the next 3 or 4 years just chasing bass like crazy all over East Texas and all that. And then one day I came across the movie A River Runs Through It, which is the, everybody's got their kind of sappy River Runs Through It story. And I saw that movie. And I think probably with the fly fishing, what really drew me to fly fishing and watching that movie was, I think it appealed to the creative side of me, you know, some of the romantic qualities of fly fishing and all that. And so I'm sitting there watching that movie and I thought, well, are you kidding me? If Brad Pitt can do it, I can do it, right? And you know, that turned out to be a gross miscalculation on my part as far
that's
as
right. Brad's as pretty far talented. As,
So you know, I end up convincing a buddy of mine that we should get into fly fishing. He fished even less than I did, and we didn't know anybody that fly fished at the time. But we kind of talked each other into doing it. He's one of those friends that we both have been like throughout our lives that kind of talked each other into doing and trying, you know, ridiculous things and all that and just kind of seeing what would happen. And so we went to the local like Gander Mountain and got cheap rod reel setups and ended up looking just like total morons out on the water trying to figure stuff out. And I think one of my first times that I really ever got a chance at trout, because I mean, we're living in Texas, so there's not a whole lot of trout opportunities in Texas. We took a trip up to Ouray. We had some friends staying in Ouray and we came up and stayed with them for a week and had decided, all right, we're going to go hit like the, you know, the Gunnison, man. We're going to go into Black Canyon and go hit the Gunnison and try it. And we had no clue what we were doing. We didn't have the right gear. We didn't, I mean, like I'm talking like stealing waders from the church baptistry, you know? So like, you know, ridiculously heavy rubber waders and weren't breathable. And here we are walking through Black Canyon looking like idiots, and everybody's probably looking at us like crazy. And we spent most of the 2 days trying to fish, just tangled up in our own lines and not knowing the difference between dry flies and nymphs. And, you know, people talking to us about trying dry, you know, dry dropper rigs and all this. And we're like, I have no clue what you're talking about, man. But we're just shaking our head. Yes. Like, oh yeah, yeah, totally, man. Absolutely. I get it. You know? And so, you know, that was our story and just trying to figure it out from there. And I think the reason I stayed with it was just probably a testimony more than anything else to my own stubbornness. I really honestly, I just picked up a fly rod and it didn't matter whether I was catching fish or not. I just absolutely fell in love with it and haven't really ever gone back to conventional fishing since then. You know, I was just bound and determined that, you know, wherever I was going to go, I was going to try and get into fish. And So I spent some time in Texas, you know, still chasing bass and stuff like that. And eventually in 2010, we moved here to Colorado, and we've been living in Fort Collins ever since. And, you know, just getting to know Colorado and falling in love with trout fishing and all that. And then somewhere along the way, kind of accidentally started a fly fishing business. So, yeah.
That's right. And the fly fishing business is cool because when I first saw your bags, the river runs through it is kind of, I think, the first thing that went across my mind because, yeah. You know, in that movie, you know, Brad Pitt, like you said, you know, it actually, we had a River Runs Through It episode, the guy that was a coach for Brad Pitt and some other people.
I'll yeah, yeah.
In the show notes. But yeah, I mean, obviously that gear that Brad was wearing, the old hat and that bag that looks similar to yours. And we'll dig into a little bit of that, but it's definitely a throwback. I want to go back to, you mentioned, so you're in Alaska, which is also amazing, you know, for that period of time. Why did your family, why did your dad move back? Why did you leave Alaska?
I think it was just really just the distance from family more than anything. I think we all loved living there. I think it appealed. But both of my parents moved around a lot when they were younger. My mom's dad was lieutenant commander in the Navy, and so she lived all over the country from Hawaii to West Virginia. So she spent her whole childhood moving around. And my dad was in the Navy and loved, you know, was used to kind of moving around yeah. and spent a lot of time just I think adventure and just, you know, kind of uprooting and doing some of that stuff really appealed to them. And they wanted my brother and I think they wanted to instill that in us. And so I think, you know, that's what took us there. And I think really it was just the distance. I mean, you know, from Texas, it was a 9-hour flight with layovers and all that, you know, and so we're seeing family a couple times a year, and my dad's parents were getting older and all that. And I think he wanted to be closer to his parents. And so, yeah you know, so it was a total bummer to move. And, I've, you know, I mean, that's been 20 something years ago that we lived in Alaska, and I've never gotten to go back. And I, you know, still to this day, really want to go back and get into salmon and all that stuff on a fly rod and all that. But, yeah, you know, like, we ended up in Texas instead, and that's just been a part of my story. And honestly, I think, you know, I'd be in a very different place in my life if we hadn't moved back to Texas. So, yeah.
Yeah. And Texas is a hot spot for fishing as well. So that's not a bad place to land. And the weather is a little overall, it's a little nicer, right, throughout the year.
It's a little warmer. I would definitely say that I was not, even being born in Texas and having moved back there and spent most of my, you know, growing up and a lot of my adult life there, I don't know that I can say that I identify with being a Texan.
Oh yeah.
You know, like I remember moving back as a freshman going, dude, it is so freaking hot here all the time, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, you get a lot more sunny days. You're not having to deal with the crazy sub-zero temperatures that you do in the winter in Alaska. And so, you know, there's trade-offs both ways, but, yeah, I mean, I think that's part of what drew us to Colorado too, is it was kind of a happy medium between Alaska and being in Texas and everything.
Well, let's hear about how you just kind of mentioned a little bit there on the bag. So how do you go from, you know, obviously you're into fly fishing, you're loving it, and now you create this company building these bags. How did that come to be?
Yeah. So when I'll go back and say when I first really started trying my hand at trout, this was after our terrible experience in Ouray, and in Black Canyon and all that, we ended up back in Texas, and I met another guy that did a little bit of fly fishing here and there. And he told me about Beavers Bend State Park in Oklahoma, which is about 3 hours from us. And Beavers Bend is a pretty cool trout fishery. It's definitely, at least at the time, there were parts of it that were kind of like the kiddie pool of fly fishing. So if you really wanted to try your hand at a trout and you had no clue what you were doing, you could still get in there and be almost guaranteed that you were going to get a fish no matter what time of the year you went. And so we started going up there probably once a month or so, and still just had, I had bought a cheap pair of, you know, neoprene waders from, you know, the local sporting goods store, and still looking like an idiot out there and everything. Just, we were just trying to figure stuff out. But my very first thing that I ever had to carry any sort of gear was this little Eddie Bauer satchel that was just kind of carried like a messenger bag. And it was big enough. And honestly, I used to use it when I would travel internationally a lot, because I could hold my passport in there and plane tickets and some things like that. And it was big enough to hold a fly box and a pair of nippers and some hemostats and stuff like that. And that was the very first thing I fished with until we moved to Colorado. And I kind of started, I owned several different pieces of gear. I've had waist packs and chest packs and sling bags and, you know, the whole gamut. And honestly, like I was just using all these different pieces of gear, trying stuff out. And some of them wore out much quicker than what I thought they would. And that was kind of a disappointment. And some of it was, I just didn't like the form factors of any of them. You know, like I kind of liked the chest pack for a while, but I hated not being able to see my feet when I was walking through the river and, you know, just things like that. And at some point I kind of, you know, just started remembering this like really simple Eddie Bauer thing that wasn't even meant to be used for fishing. But I just remembered that it seemed just so convenient to me to have that kind of slung on me like that. And I kind of started dreaming up, you know, like, you know, what if I had a bag that was more like a messenger bag style thing, like some sort of side bag that I could carry on my side. And I didn't have a clue about sewing or anything like that. I had no clue about any of that. But my mom happens to be a seamstress. She had to grow up learning how to sew her own clothes and all that. And so they came in to visit. And I told her, I was like, hey, I got this kind of idea for this bag or whatever. Could you kind of give me a sewing lesson? Just show me, because I didn't know how to use a sewing machine. And so she sat me down. We kind of drew up a really basic design of just a really basic messenger bag, and kind of sewed it up in a day. And I kind of got the idea and, you know, and the mechanics of sewing and kind of what it took to sew a bag. And, you know, it's kind of those deals. Like anytime you make something, you have an idea for something, you make it. And the moment you make it, you kind of see it and you hold it and you go, oh, now that I'm holding it and I've done this, I know that I would change this and this and this and this. And so I kind of, you know, after making one, went, oh, well, this isn't anything kind of, you know, what I wanted. So I kind of drew up another design and got behind my wife's really cheap little, you know, sewing machine that she had bought like at the craft store or whatever, and sewed up another one with some cheap canvas that was bought at like a Joann's fabric or something. Yeah. And, you know, just went through, started going through iterations, just trying things and trying to add different features. And at some point that led me kind of stumbling onto, you know, the wax canvas and some of the materials that we use now, from just using normal, you know, regular canvas to waxing canvas and all that, kind of discovering some of those things and the qualities about them and all that. And then at some point when I was out fishing with some of this stuff, I'd had friends that I fished with start asking me about gear and, you know, had I thought about selling them or would I make them one? So I made some friends, some packs and things. And then at some point I just kind of went, I don't know, somebody had suggested that I put one online and sell it. And I said, well, where, you know, I don't know where to sell this stuff, you know, and somebody suggested me Etsy, and I didn't have a clue what Etsy was at the time, but I got an account and put one on there, and it sold like a week later, and kind of took the money and, you know, bought some more material, made another one. And that kind of just, you know, exploded from there. And now, I mean, we still have an Etsy shop and all that, but most of our sales now are through our website and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But yeah, it was just, you know, it's just something that kind of started on accident. At some point we kind of looked up and went, okay, we've kind of graduated from just being this like random thing on Etsy that's selling a bag every now and then to like, we have people consistently buying gear from us and wanting things and all that. And so it kind of became something that was a little bit more official, and it was just totally on accident that it happened. And
yeah,
you know, here I am 6 years later, you know, owning a fly fishing gear business. So
quick word from our sponsor. Stonefly Nets is putting quality before quantity with their handcrafted custom wood nets. Charleston, South Carolina native Ethan Eigelhart was bitten by the fly fishing bug in 2014, and shortly thereafter started Stonefly Nets. Ethan lives in the trout-rich waters of the Arkansas Ozarks and handcrafts these nets, which you are going to love. I can be honest here and tell you that Stonefly brought me into the net world, and I am happy they did, because before this, you know the story, I wasn't really a big net person. And after having the Stonefly net, you definitely don't go back. You're not going back after that. And now that I've got my new sling pack, I got all the gear, the net clips on really nice. So it's just a good fit. You know, I always have that net and I can get my pitcher and I can get the good stuff. You can select from 4 different sizes and a bunch of different wood options, some handle options, some burl options. You can go full custom or just grab something off the shelf. Ethan's got you covered on everything, and he always loves to tell a story back to his grandmother and the connection of him remembering that old bamboo rod, and he thinks of that when he's building these nets as well. It's that old connection to some classic products that are going to last you a lifetime. So if you want to get started right now, head over to wetflyswing.com/stonefly and get a custom net right now. That's Stonefly, Stonefly. Okay, back to the show.
And what is, so the wax canvas, describe the, you know, how somebody that doesn't know, I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people would know it's, I think it's pretty much waterproof, but talk about how that's different than, say, any other fly bag material you would use.
Yeah, so I would say the two biggest qualities, and probably where a lot of misconceptions happen around it also with wax canvas, but the two biggest qualities of it are the water repellency and the durability of it. I get a lot of questions from people that are asking if it's waterproof, and wax canvas isn't waterproof. It is. So, and it, what it is, it's cotton, that is not just the surface is not just treated with a wax.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually saturated all the way through into the fibers of the material. So down to the core of every fiber is wax all the way through. So even if it gets scratched or rubbed up against something and the wax is hurt on the surface, there's wax all the way through the fabric from one side, you know, from top to bottom, all the way through both surfaces. And so it does create a super, super water repellent product, but it's not waterproof because it still has to be sewn together. You can't weld it like you can some of the laminated fabrics like TPU fabrics and things like that. So anytime you have to sew something, you're poking holes in the fabric, and so water can get through seams. But it takes quite a while. Like, I can have my bag sitting in water while I'm fishing, and it takes 30 minutes to an hour to start seeing any sort of real water collecting in the bag at all.
Gotcha.
But then, like, you know, we use brass zippers, and so brass zippers aren't watertight, you know? So if you're going to dunk your bag, then you're going to get water coming in through the zippers and things like that. But, you know, so it's not waterproof. It's super, super water resistant and really weatherproof and all that stuff. And because it's, you know, because of the wax, it doesn't stink when it gets wet and all that. It doesn't mold. It's super, super easy to clean and all that stuff. But then you can just beat the trash out of it. It is bulletproof. It's insane how tough this stuff is. And I tell this story a lot, that I was up in our canyon outside of Fort Collins fishing one day, and I had been fishing a spot and went back to my truck and loaded some gear in the back of my truck. And I didn't realize that I'd left my bag hanging on the bumper of my truck. And I started driving up the canyon with my bag just dragging along the highway behind me.
Oh, wow.
And 2 or 3 miles later, I had somebody flashing their headlights at me, and I pulled over the next pullout. And they told me that I had stuff hanging off the back of my truck. And I went, I thought, oh my God, like my bags, like I've spilled all my gear all out over the highway and all that stuff. And you can even tell they've been drug along the highway. It's just insanely, insanely durable. And so there's that quality. And then just the fact that you can renew it. So you can buy refinishing bars of wax. And the bag starts to break in and wear out, and wax kind of naturally just leaches out of the bag over time, you can rewax the bag and get it back 100% to its full water repellency and durability and everything else. And that's why, you know, it has this reputation of just lasting insanely long periods of time, 20 and 30 years. I mean, you think about brands like Filson and stuff like that sell lots of oil cloth and tin cloth, and that's all the same kind of deal. It's different iterations of oil or wax. And, you know, you've got guys that are telling stories about getting bags handed down from their grandfathers, you know, and stuff like that have been, you know, all over the world, because it just lasts forever and ever and ever. So.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. No, so I mean, and it's also just the, like you said, the look, right? You kind of, people that are buying your stuff want something that's a little bit different than, you know, your waterproof dry bag or whatever other sling pack. This is kind of unique. So do you think people are first coming because they want to get it because of the, how it looks, or because of the durability in that piece?
Man, that's a good question. I think, honestly, it's both. I think we get a lot of customers that are actually already really educated on the product and what it is. And like, and for instance, like we get a lot of Filson customers, and I don't say that to be like disparaging against Filson at all. I love, you know, products like Filson. You don't get to be a brand that's over 100 years old without making just absolutely killer products.
Right.
So like when somebody comes to me and they say, hey, like I've been fishing, you know, Filson stuff and using Filson gear, for instance, for a really long time, and I kind of just want to take it to the next level. Like, honestly, for me, I'm just kind of like humbled by that, going like, oh man, that's awesome that you would come to us instead of sticking with this, you know, absolutely killer brand or something. So there's a lot of people that are really already educated on that, and they're just looking for the next thing, or they want something that's a little bit more boutique, you know, or they want more of a relationship with the person that's making it. And then we have guys that just like the look of it, and they have, and that's cool too. You know, like I don't really push it for the aesthetic quality. I think that kind of just speaks to itself. Really kind of what we push it as is you want gear that you can just take out and beat the trash out of, that's going to stay with you forever. You know, that's really what we push it as. And then the guys that like it for the aesthetic or the timeless quality, like they kind of find us either way. And, you know, so we get a lot of guys that are, you know, they're like the purists of the sport and all that stuff that come, and they love it because they want all bamboo rods. They want all, you know, natural materials and all that. And then there's guys that just want stuff that you can just, that they're just willing to spend the money just for something that's going to last them for forever. So, it's kind of across the board.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And it is some of that classic gear. You know, there's a lot of, that was that episode we did on the classic gear. It was, you know, there's a lot of gear that's, you know, still super high quality stuff, you know, that's out there that, you know, you don't have to necessarily buy a brand new thing from whatever, a brand new reel. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that's still good. Yeah, we talked about that. And but no, this is good. So we got a good feel for your products. And you also do some other stuff, right? You have like some flywalls. Talk about your other items you have in your line.
Yeah. So the main two things that we do with all of our fly fishing stuff is that we sell our side bags and we have a couple different bags, and then just, we do some accessories and stuff. And I'd say most of those accessories are kind of focused around wallets and just organizational tools to help. Mm-hmm. So we have one wallet that is just made to help organize leaders and all that stuff. And it's got a bunch of different pockets in it. So you can kind of stick your leaders in and have them organized from, you know, 7X through 1X and, you know, put some of the stuff like that in if you need to hold a fishing license or something. And then we have one that's a streamer wallet that a lot of guys will take out. I don't do a whole lot of streamer fishing myself, but a lot of guys love that. You know, if they're, you know, steelheader guys and stuff like that who aren't necessarily looking to, you know, take a pack out or anything else, they can just throw some flies in there and get going. And then we have one that's more of a hybrid, and that was really kind of put also towards like the trout spay guys and the steelhead guys that, you know, may want to carry a few tips with them and some flies and kind of get out on the water with that and just kind of be minimalist and organized with it. And so those are our three main ones. It's a streamer wallet, a leader wallet, and then kind of a, we call it our hybrid, but it's kind of a half leader wallet, half streamer wallet.
Gotcha. And your bags are, so are there a lot of guys, I would think with the steelheading, cause that's one question I had, you know, if you're fishing like a deep run up to your chest or something like that, bag, like you said, if your bag's underwater, it's eventually going to get wet, but it can kind of splash. Are guys using it for kind of some of that deeper fishing as well?
Yeah, we have actually quite a few guys that are steelheaders that use our stuff. And I've talked to some of them, and it sounds like some of them are wearing it when they're fishing the deep hole. Some of them will leave it on the bank when they're using it. A lot of guys ask about, you know, like, well, what if I'm wading in, you know, past my waist or something like that, you know? And most of the guys that I've talked to and what I've done myself when I've waded that deep is I just cinch the bag up. You know, I just wear it much higher on my body and all that stuff to kind of get up above my waist and, you know, and all that. And I think, you know, really, like, unless you're steelheading, if you're wading chest deep in water, you're probably doing something wrong at some point, you know, unless you're steelheading. So, you know, I'll get questions, you know, from guys sometimes about that. I'm like, what are you doing fishing that you're like, are you going swimming while you're fishing or whatever, you know? So
exactly.
I would say, you know, 90% of the time it's not an issue. And I think probably steelhead guys are probably the only ones that really have to worry about it. But we sell a lot of gear to steelhead guys and all over the Pacific Northwest and up into British Columbia. You know, I've got a customer that, he's really well known here around town and all that, but he's drug his bag all the way from Patagonia up to British Columbia multiple times on steelheading adventures and giant trout adventures and Patagonia and all that. And he loves it. You know, he wears it all the time and it's his favorite pack that he wears, you know? So yeah, I don't steelhead myself just because of, you know, proximity to it or whatever. So I haven't had a chance to test it myself, but I know a lot of guys that are using it for steelheading.
Yeah, definitely. No, it is. And I think that's the thing. Steelheaders are a little bit crazy. And I was just watching a Trevor Kovich video. I'm not sure if it was him or his client, but the guy was out in a super deep run up to his, you know, chest.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had a fish on that was cartwheeling out there and stuff. So, yeah, occasionally you'll find yourself there. But, yeah, like you said, if you do, you cinch it up and you just kind of go with it. And, yeah, it's all good. So,
yeah. And I would say also, well, I was going to say also, like, with the, like, I think a lot of people's concern with the water repellency to waterproofness. And I think that's a thing that gets pushed a lot right now. And it is super cool. I mean, everybody's, you know, we're all carrying electronics with us and all that stuff too, you know, and I think that there's legitimate concern about that. But I think everybody also has a story about putting their electronics in something that's quote unquote waterproof, you know, and we haven't zipped it all the way or something like that. And so all of us have learned over time, if you spend any time on the water, that if you really don't want it to get wet, even if I was carrying a fully waterproof pack, I'm still going to put my phone in its own separate waterproof pocket.
Yeah.
You know, just because I've learned that lesson multiple times. I've been over and had it fall out of one of my pockets on my bag, or, you know, it's fallen out of a shirt pocket or, you know, whatever. So I think most of us have learned the lesson over time that regardless of the waterproofness of our bags, you know, like if we don't want our electronics to get damaged, we just need to put them in a, you know, some other sort of like,
even a Ziploc.
Yeah. A Ziploc or something like that. You know, like that's just a lesson you learn pretty quickly on the water.
That's right. So you have this product out there. And again, I always think, like we said at the start, the river runs through it. So it sounds like none of this was really, really guided. I mean, maybe that was in the back of your mind, but really it was more of that Eddie Bauer bag than it was the river runs through it, like traditional kind of thoughts, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I would say as far as like the form factor was guided by the Eddie Bauer and just loving, you know, I always carry messenger bags around with me when I'm, you know, going around town and stuff like that too. So like that's a form factor that's really comfortable for me. And the aesthetic thing, I think I kind of just stumbled upon it. And there was a couple reasons for that. One was I do like the look of it. And part of growing up in Alaska is I was around a lot of military guys. There's a whole big military population up there and all that. And, you know, we're close to Elmendorf Air Force Base and all that. And being a kid of the 80s also, you know, my favorite movie growing up was Top Gun. And I just loved the look of just this, you know, who's not excited for a new Top Gun movie to come out?
Right. Oh, is it coming out?
At some point before we die, it keeps getting put off. But, you know, I loved the look of like just the, you know, the olive green, you know, army colors and the color, you know, the army green color flight suits and all that. And back in the 80s and stuff, like a lot of pilots would have these like colors of pop, you know, they like yellows and reds and stuff like that to kind of with their, you know, with the green of their flight suits and all that. And so a lot of it was kind of inspired by that look. And that's kind of why I'm sort of drawn to like the olives and the browns and stuff like that. And then I, you know, some of it also, like, because I'm a musician and I walk around in either a pair of Vans or a pair of Chuck Taylors all the time, I love like the white top stitching on all my shoes. And so I put this little pop of white top stitching on all of our bags just because it looks pretty cool, you know, on a bag and all that. But yeah, so I, you know, I think some of it was inspired by just kind of growing up with a lot of friends who had dads that were in the military and I had parents that were in the military and all that stuff. And then I think I kind of at some point just discovered the waxed canvas and leather quality of that also. And those really, those kind of naturally married themselves together with that. So the form factor, came from Eddie Bauer, and then the aesthetic properties and the particular materials, I think were probably more inspired by just looking for the durability and just kind of like kind of what I grew up around and all that.
Gotcha. When I think of it, like companies doing, maybe Filson is one of them, but are there other companies out there making a similar kind of bag to what you have, or are there a lot? I'm not even sure.
There are two or three. There are honestly a lot of like smaller boutique, you know, manufacturers, and you probably interviewed some of them, you know, like there's guys from like Deli Fresh and Yakota down in the Denver area. There's another manufacturer that does something similar to what we do over in New England. I think they're in Vermont, if I remember correctly. And they do something really similar to what we're doing, you know, and you know, there's not a lot of us that are doing that. And, you know, there's the fly fishing industry, as niche as it is, there's still, you know, there's a lot of room for people to try out a lot of different products and to make a lot of different things. And, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of whether we're making, you know, waterproof packs that look like space packs, you know, down to stuff that we're making or other brands like us are making, like, you know, a bag is a bag is a bag at the end of the day. I mean, they've been around forever and we're all just doing different versions of the same thing and looking for different qualities and, you know, kind of what we want to focus on. And for us, it was about, you know, having bags that were durable. It, like I'm a big believer in storytelling and like living, you know, just living in a way that you have a lot of stories to tell. And I love the idea that I can make a product that you can go out and just beat the trash out of and it will wear all of those scars really well and kind of carries a piece of your history with it, you know, on that product. And I think that that's really cool. You know, that's something you can pass down to somebody else at the end of your life or whatever. And they get a piece of your history and everything. And I just think that's a really cool thing to do and to be able to help tell those stories. So
that's right. I have an old vest. It's funny. I just recently got a new sling pack and I had this old vest I was using, like literally the vest, right? You don't see that too often, but I'll tell you what, I got my use out of it. It was a Columbia vest and I got it. Gosh, I'm not even sure. It might be 20 years old. And I just liked it because it fit. I always liked the vest. And now I'm past the vest. I've been to the sling. So I've been to the 21st century. And, but I, you know, I do a lot of steelhead obviously and stuff too. So I like the little minimalist stuff too, where it's just like a little, a little tiny chest pack or whatever. So
yeah, totally.
This is good. Okay. Well, this is, I think we're going to start to take it out of here in a little bit. And I just had a couple of questions just thinking, I mean, these are some stuff not necessarily exactly related to the bag, but just you, I mean, you mentioned music. So is that something, what were the instruments? Or are you still playing or what are you doing there?
I do still play. So my dad's side of the family was really, really musical when I was growing up. Like I had my dad's uncle was, I think like the director of like the Army National Band in Washington, D.C., who played for like Reagan and all this. And so I had family members, I think that owned music stores and were band directors and all this stuff. And so I grew up with music in my life. My dad loved listening to music and all that. So I started kind of singing when I was really young and picked up drums when I was in elementary school and played drums through high school. And later in high school, I picked up guitar and ended up being a music major with a like a focus on commercial voice, which is like, you know, like popular music, vocal performance kind of a deal. But, you know, along the way, just picking up other instruments and all that and playing, you know, you play around enough people to play other instruments and you kind of start to pick them up. And then just as a music major, as you learn all the theory and stuff that goes into that, you kind of, you can take the theory. And if you learn, you know, you learn that, you can apply it to just about anything you pick up. So I play piano and guitar and bass and mandolin and drums and all this stuff. And I'm not amazing at any of them, but I kind of consider myself to be a utility player more than anything else. And I've done a lot of work in studios and helping to produce other friends and all that. And so I'm a guy that, you know, when I'm in a recording studio, if somebody needs an extra musician to sit in and do this one part, I can pick it up and play it and get the part done for somebody and all that. So I did that, and, you know, touring with that and then working in some studios and doing that kind of stuff. And I don't really do it professionally anymore, but I still have guitars sitting all over my house and pianos and all that stuff. So I still do all that stuff all the time just for my own joy. So.
Question. Here's the question. Have you ever passed up a fishing hole because you didn't have your rod handy? Maybe you were around the city and you're like, oh, wow, there's a water body. There's a fish rising. You didn't have your rod handy. Those days are behind you now with the Rare Gear packable rod. This thing is crazy. It's kind of like a mixture between Tenkara and like traditional rods. It's what you might call the holy grail of rods. You got to see this thing. Take a look at the video, the way this thing packs down. Literally, this thing has no guides. It packs up small enough to put in your bag in your hip pack, and it travels with the fly on. So literally, you just pull it out, and within seconds, you're fishing. And this is pretty cool. And you're probably thinking, or you might be thinking, if this is the first time you heard that, this is some type of a gimmick. And I can tell you it's not. I've been using this thing, and it's literally right now in my camo backpack. It's always there and ready to go, and I've been busting that thing out. It casts great. It's not going to cast as long as your 7-weight into the wind sort of thing, but you can shoot some line out no problem, and it feels good, and it's just compact and ready to go. So this is another thing to add into your quiver. This might not be your only rod, but it is another rod that's going to, it's like that tool in the toolbox, right? Another tool in the toolbox. You can head over to Rare Gear right now, raregear.com, and check out this very unique product. That's Rare, R-E-Y-R, gear.com. Check it out right now. You support this podcast by checking it out and checking out a good video, something different right now. You support this podcast by clicking there now. Okay, back to the show.
Are there any, is there like a videos out there with, or anything with your, you said you're in some bands from your past?
Probably not. All the bands that I was in, this was pre-YouTube era and all this stuff. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any videos of me out there playing anywhere.
What was the name? Give us a name of a band. What was one of the band names?
Oh, gosh. The one that would probably be most, and I think they changed their band name after I got out of the band. See, out of high school, I played in a band called Seven Channels. And they ended up, I quit the band because the lead singer and I kind of just started realizing he wasn't the person I enjoyed hanging around with the most. Right. And I was going to be a music major anyway. So I was going to go off to school. So I ended up quitting the band. But they, I think, ended up changing their name to The Vanished or something like that. But so there may be videos of them out there, but I'm not in the band anymore.
Gotcha.
And that would probably be the one that people might recognize the most. And they went on and got a record contract. And I think they toured with a bunch of people and all that stuff. But that was after I left the band and everything. And then, you know, just working with singer-songwriters and kind of doing some of that myself and all. But, yeah, nothing super recognizable or anything.
There you go. Yeah, I was just... music always comes up. It's interesting for me because sometimes I'll throw in a music, you know, a track in the show to keep it interesting. But and we had Berkheimer on, who builds some pretty amazing rods, and he was a musician, you know, in his past. And he talked about how he gave it. He's glad he did because a lot of his friends that were in that world are dead now. You know, it's just kind of tough. And it sounds like you were a little more classically trained, mate. So maybe you weren't in necessarily that scene, but it is an interesting scene, right?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I guess classically trained, I was there's classical music they have to do when you're a music major, but all the bands that I played in were grunge bands and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I'm a kid in the 90s. And
oh, yeah. So that's what I was going to say there, Chris. So I was listening to Eddie Vedder on another podcast. I was just kind of curious. So you're in that era. What was your that grunge scene when who was your band in that scene?
Man, I mean, it's hard to go wrong with bands like Nirvana,
yeah.
Soundgarden, stuff like that. I mean, obviously Pearl Jam and things like that. So, you know, just growing up in, you know, in a lot of that. My wife, she's a few years younger than me, but she, you know, kind of came in on the tail end of that and was really into bands like Jimmy Eat World and Weezer and, you know, all of that stuff. Yeah. And so, you know, just pretty much any band that you would have heard during the 90s, we spent time on circulation in our CD players in our cars, you know,
that's
in the 90s, back when people still played CDs.
That's right. No, that's awesome. Yeah, I'll throw it just for fun. I'll throw it a Pearl Jam song in the show notes. We'll get a video, a little shout out to that era. So that was a game changer for sure. Okay, so anything else you want to, you know, give a shout out to what you have going either now? I was going to ask you, you know, kind of a question about getting the word out, how you do it with your company, but tell us about anything new. What are you doing in the next 6 months or so?
Next 6 months, I mean, really for us, like we've put a lot of focus into our business, really kind of me going full time into it over the last year and a half. It's kind of been a side hustle almost for the first several years. And over the last year and a half or 2 years, we kind of went, okay, let's just go full on into it. And so we spent a lot of time just as our business has grown, just working on efficiencies and things like that. So that's kind of been the name of our game. It's just speeding up production and everything. And I think my mantra for our gear, because we really are, when you use the term like mom and pop business, that is what we are. It is me making everything. And my wife does a lot of our marketing stuff and a lot of our back end kind of stuff and all that. So for me, you know, it's always been a question of like, what can we do? And like, I would say I'm more interested in doing a few things well than doing a ton of stuff and doing a, you know, some sort of half-cocked job at it, you know? And so just continuing for us to focus on the products that we have and then looking at, you know, places that we want to expand. We look at a lot of that. We get a lot of questions about whether or not, you know, we're interested in expanding into hunting gear. And so we look at some hunting gear sometimes, or, you know, just moving towards more some more lifestyle kind of things, messenger bags. We do a lot of custom work on like messenger bags and duffels and stuff for travel and all that. And really, you know, for us, we think of ourselves as a people brand, like, and just on the relationship side of it, we have just phenomenal relationships with our customers. And I think that they appreciate that when they get in touch with us, that they're talking to the guy that owns the business and is going to make their gear, you know, and all that. And so being able to just provide people with gear that's going to stick with them for the long haul. And in a way, I think kind of, you know, we talk about like adventure and journey and all that stuff, and kind of even sort of redefining that, you know, like in fly fishing, you know, we go to these fly fishing film festivals and we look at all these Instagram posts and it's guys that are going to the Seychelles or, you know, taking these epic trips across the world doing all this stuff. And for the average guy, you know, the average Joe half the time doesn't even have time to go on a backpacking trip up, you know, up to his local, you know, Alpine lake or whatever, you know. Sometimes we're just lucky to get out on the weekends. So just redefining what that is for people and saying, like, if we're making adventure gear, let's redefine what adventure is. Cause for some people, adventure is taking their kid out and teaching them how to cast a fly rod, you know, and getting in their first trout. Some people it is doing multi-day excursions into the backcountry to go hit up, you know, a bunch of random Alpine lakes that full of, you know, cutthroat that, you know, haven't seen a fly in, you know, in a year or something, you know? So it's across the spectrum. And so really for us, like, I think we're interested in expanding in both fly fishing and continue to develop products in fly fishing, and then expanding outside of that and just going like, okay, what does journey gear and adventure gear look like for different people? And not presenting it as this thing that's like untouchable, that you have to be some guy that's going, you know, that's booking yearly, you know, excursions to British Columbia to go steelheading. And, you know, what does adventure look like for you in your backyard and in your normal life? And so that's kind of really the gear that we, you know, we want to focus on is just, you know, what does that look like for everybody? And how do we meet people where they are with that?
Yeah. The day in and day out. That's cool.
Yeah.
So just a couple more. We'll let you get out of here, Chris. You know, I'm curious. So it's really interesting. You know, we have a lot of people listen that have companies that are, you know, doing things on the side and things like that. What was it like for you when you finally, you know, how'd you know the time was right to jump in all in on this thing?
I think when COVID hit and the world turned upside down, we just kind of went, hey, you know what? Let's just give it a go. Honestly, yeah. I kind of thought we would see business really go downhill once COVID hit, when people, you know, we're kind of wrestling with jobs and employment stuff and all that. And I think really, it's, you know, with a combination of like the industry growing like it is just in general. And then I think, you know, like with COVID happening, the byproduct of that was it forced a lot of people outside also.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the government handing out stimmy checks like crazy, people had money burning holes in their pockets.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
for us, really, you know, like we just saw crazy, crazy amounts of growth over the last couple of years. And so we just kind of looked at it and went, okay, let's just go full bore into this and make it happen, you know? And so I'm really fortunate too, that my wife does have a much more full-time secure income in that. She works for a health system and all that. And so we're not fully reliant on my income as we continue to grow our business and everything else. But that just kind of seemed like the right time for us to just go, hey, let's make a run at this and make it happen. And so we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of years just really pouring everything we can and, you know, effort wise and all that stuff into really kind of starting to grow and make something a little bit more solid out of what we've had going for the last 6 years or so.
That's it. And how did that feel when you kind of were like fully in on it?
Oh, it's a great feeling. You know, I mean, it's been something that's been a part of my life, like I said, for the last 6 years, and to be able to just now fully dedicate all my time to it is really cool. There's ups and downs to it. You know, like the ups are that I'm able to put a lot more product and get to meet a lot more customers and build relationships with a lot of people. The downside is that I don't fish nearly as often as I want to, because I'm constantly, you know, constantly in the shop, just making stuff and all that, you know. I get, you know, and I'm sure this is the case for just about anybody that owns a fly fishing business. It's like, oh man, you must get to fish all the time. I was like, are you kidding? Like I never get to fish anymore. I'm constantly busy, you know? So, you know, so there's downsides to it too. And just, you know, working through the kinks of, you know, reworking your schedule and going, you know, how do I carve out time to make fly fishing a regular part of my day now? Since I do own a fly fishing business, I should probably be out on the water, you know, fishing That's regularly right. and all that, you know?
Yeah, time block it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just kind of learning new rhythms with stuff like that and everything. But generally speaking, it's been great and amazing. And we love the people that we get to meet. And we have friends all over the world that have bought our products that we have amazing relationships with. And it's really cool. We joke all the time that we could go just about anywhere in the world at this point and call somebody up that we know that's purchased our product and uses it on a regular basis, and we could just go fishing with them. And that's a pretty cool thing to think about, that we get to know these people that I still to this day, I love calling customers that have had our bags for 2 or 3 or 4 years and just checking in on them and saying, hey man, how's it going? How's the bag doing? You know, all that stuff. And that's, I mean, you know, again, like I said before, I kind of see us as being in the people business more than anything else. And that's true. We just love our customers, and we take that responsibility really seriously, that, you know, because our gear is not cheap, you know. And the irony is that I probably couldn't even afford my own gear in some ways. And so if somebody's willing to spend that kind of money with us, I take that really seriously. And that's a big responsibility. And I want to make sure that the people that are buying our products are going to be 100% satisfied with that all the way. So, you know, it always comes back with, you know, in our case to people and making sure that we're making a product that people are happy with and that we're equipping them to go and do what it is that they want to do with it. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you know, I think it's a tribute to you. I think this episode began, Tyler, one of our listeners, kind of reached out and he, you know, noted you guys. And so that's one of those things I always try to do as well. Yeah. Is when we get listeners that, you know, come out and reach out to us and say, hey, do this episode. I can't, you know, get them all in, but I try to when I can. So that shows, you know, people are loving your stuff and wanting to get the word out there.
Yeah. Tyler's a good guy. I like Tyler a lot. He's a cool kid. Kid. He's not a kid. He's an adult. I've met him. He's a cool guy. I don't know why I said kid.
That's right. I know they're all kids. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, Chris. Well, I think we're good here. I think we dug into a little bit and we understand, at least I do now. I think this is a product for sure. I could definitely see myself wearing on the stream, you know, and definitely see the benefits and things like that. But anything else before we get out here? You want to give a shout out to what you have coming or anything new, you know, in the next, like I said, next 6 months to a year?
No, not really, man. You know, just if listeners get a chance, just check us out, see what we're about and all that stuff. You can, any customers know, if they go to our website, they can always get in touch with us through our website, emailing me or the chat function on our website. When you get in touch with us, you're talking to me, you're not talking to anybody else. And so I love meeting people and getting to know and finding out what, you know, what somebody's needs are. So if anybody's interested in our stuff, you know, give us a call. And if you're not, then I'll point you. If our stuff's not for you, I'll point you in the direction of somebody that will work better for you as well. So.
Gotcha. Are you ever going to get to a point where when you think about scaling this thing, you are actually trying to, you know, maybe, how does that look? You know, when you think about scaling, is that something you're interested in doing?
Yeah, definitely. And we're kind of brushing up against that right now a little bit and kind of learning some of the limitations of one person doing everything. And we certainly want to scale. And I think for us, especially because quality is such a high a high priority for me. Being able to keep everything in house as much as possible is huge. And so for us, it would look like hiring other folks that can work in a shop here with us, that we can, you know, be a part of, like just watching, you know, the quality happen and being able to be as hands-on as possible. I love still myself, even as busy as we get, I love making the products myself and have my hands on it. And so, you know, I'd love to add, you know, over time when it makes sense to, you know, add a couple of other folks that can help with the manufacturing side of it and all that. But I mean, we're a family business and I'm not interested in being some sort of massive company. And that's not to disparage any large companies. There are phenomenal fly fishing brands out there that I have a huge amount of respect for that are doing amazing things. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just a dude that found fly fishing, or maybe fly fishing found me, and somehow I ended up in that making fly fishing gear. And so, you know, I love having this business that, you know, somehow speaks to people, and I want to keep it that way. I want to keep it personal as much as we can and all that. And maybe that's terrible for business. I don't know. I'm not a business guy. So.
Right.
Probably somebody with a much more successful business than me is listening going, oh, that guy's crazy.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and on your products, are you, I mean, that is a good point. I mean, keeping it, you got to know, right? Do you want to have like 20 people working for you, and then you have the issue of dealing with a bunch of people, right? Or do you keep it small and in-house and it's just you and a person or two, and you know what I mean? You have some limitation. Like, how many bags do you need to build, right? That's the whole question. And there's Absolutely. A question for you right there. So your bag, like you get one of these bags in your typical side bag, how long does mm-hmm. that thing take you from start to finish to build?
Honestly, it kind of depends on whether you're doing one or you're doing a bunch. And we work mainly in small batches and stuff like that. So I can do a batch of, you know, if I was... Well, let's say a typical batch of bags for me would be probably 5 or 6 bags at a time. It takes me a couple of days to do 5 or 6 from the process from beginning to end. Whereas like it takes me kind of about the same time to do one bag, you know? So like once you get into like batch producing and stuff like that, things go much faster and you've got to process down and all that. And so, you know, like that's about as quick as we can go right now with some of that stuff. And that's kind of one of the reasons that we also stayed away for the most part from wholesale orders and things. It just doesn't make sense for us. For the most part, for, you know, the time factor and all that stuff, there's, you know, you're not getting paid for your time quite as well on that for us. And so, you know, so occasionally we'll do some wholesale orders from people, but for the most part, we like the direct relationship with our customers and all that stuff. And it makes more financial sense for us as a business right now where we're at to keep it where we are. So,
yeah, keep it where it is. Nice, Chris. All right. Well, hey, thanks for the time today. This has been good to get some light on what you have going there. And yeah, we'll definitely send some people your way who want, you know, something like we talked about today. And yeah, we'll look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Awesome, Dave. I appreciate it, man.
So there you go. If you want to find every show note, every link, and everything else we covered here today, wetflyswing.com/301. That's right. We have passed the 300 mark. Season 7, we have begun, and we are going to keep this train rolling along. We've got some new trivia. We've got all sorts of stuff going here. We got a new trivia segment coming up here, so you're going to want to check that out. We're going to have a link at wetflyswing.com/trivia where you're going to be able to connect and have a good time there and win some swag. We've been told we need to give out some swag. So this is one way we're going to be doing it here. I am heading out of here right now, and I'm looking ahead. I think next week's episode is going to be, I think it's Click and Paul Reels. So very cool episode. Very cool. We shed some light on a reel that I definitely probably will be picking up. So here we go. We're getting out of here. Thank you again for everything, and thank you for sharing this episode with one other person. If you get a chance this week, hope to see you on the river. Hope to see you maybe on the water or maybe online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.